access number 11922, Reel 1.
Mr. P.V. Jenkins, Reel 1. You were telling me earlier that you come from Swansea.
Yes.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a docker.
And were you educated in Swansea?
Yes.
How did you come to join the army then?
Conscripted.
What was your reaction when you heard that you were called up?
Just normal. Because you expected it, you see.
Do you remember the date?
Yes. I registered actually on the 17th of February 1940. But I enlisted on the 4th of the 4th, 1940. So that doesn't matter, really.
Was that in Swansea?
In Swansea.
And where did you do your basic training?
In Luton. 7 weeks in Luton.
What was it like?
A bit severe starting off, but towards the end you got well accustomed to it, see?
In what way was it severe?
Well, strictness, you know, and we thought, because if you understand, the furthest I had been previous to being called up for the army was Barry. That's the furthest I had been. So when I joined the army, when I went to Luton for the training, we thought it was very strict, if you like. But it's a case of they only had 7 weeks to train you, and 7 weeks they had to show that they have trained you. See? And the discipline was 100%, and you had to be in by 9 o'clock at night, and so they did look after you in that respect, see?
Do you think you were treated fairly in the training?
Yes, very fairly.
And then were you allocated to the Royal Army Service Corps after that?
No, that was our RASC, that was the calling up information we had, the RASC training depot, number 7 driver training centre, Luton.
So you were trained to drive heavy goods?
Yes, anything.
Had you known how to drive before you went?
I had a motorcycle previous.
When was it that you went out to the Middle East?
Well, we went from Luton after the training. We went from there to Cromer in Norfolk for 3 weeks. Guarding positions down there, such as cliff tops and what have you, in case of parachutists. Then, after the 3 weeks, we embarked on the train. We didn't know where we were going, mine. As a matter of fact, we got fitted out with Middle East kit at 12 o'clock at night in the street, because the hotels there were taken over by the military, you see. All of them. And they fitted a house at 12 o'clock at night in the street. Now, we had an inclination it was out there somewhere, but where, we didn't know. So we embarked on the train, full pack. We embarked in, we sailed on January 3rd June. We embarked in June.
Which unit did you belong to at the time?
Which unit?
Yeah.
It was a squad, actually, where I first joined up. Then it was a company then, see? But it wasn't a company as to any particular number, like, sort of thing. But when we embarks on the train, and we get up to, we travelled all night, and we arrived at Gourock in Scotland. in the early hours of the morning. Now, we looks out of the train and we sees the water. Now, we have got no NCOs, we got no officers. So we cause a bit of an upheaval, you see, because we've had no leave. Because leave, when we were due to come on leave, Hitler had invaded Belgium and Holland, all leave cancelled. So what they did with us then, they give us a sports, taking part in sports in one of the parks in Luton, see. Well, when we arrived in Cromer, we was on guard duty. Then when we completed the 3 weeks down there, we went to, embarked on the train, and we got up to Gourock. We travelled all night. We had the greatcoat on, that's the big heavy army overcoat, and full kit. And we looks out of the train and we sees the water. And at the quayside then was the Queen Mary tender. Out in the harbour was the Queen Mary. Now, what they told us, the rail transport officer told us, was, don't worry, once you're on the boat, you get leave from there. Well, that's an impossibility, because we was on the boat for 5 days. They would never leave you off that boat, because you're going to spout your mouth, aren't you? You're going to tell everybody you're sailing in the Middle East and you're on a Queen Mary. Well, we was on the boat for 5 days and we couldn't even get a card off. The Queen Mary tender took us out to the Queen Mary. And she had just brought in, I think, Australian troops. So we arrived now, we got on the Queen Mary, and which is a fantastic ship, actually. You were allowed to go anywhere on the Queen Mary, on top of the mast, if you like, while she was lying in the water still. But the minute she set sail, you was confined then to certain decks. Well, we sailed on the 29th of June, 1940. So we set sail now. I think there was the Queen Mary, the Aquitania, and the Mauritania. And I think the escort was now, to have the exact figure, I think it was so many destroyers and a couple of cruisers. Of course, then we set sail, and the food on the Queen Mary was excellent. The accommodation what we had was excellent, because it was exactly as it was in peacetime. The only thing is, where they had beds in peacetime, they took the beds out and put bunks in. We had perfect bunks, sheets clean twice a week, food excellent, swimming pools, concerts, medical attention. So of course we there's a zigzagging course now, don't we? And our first port of call was Sierra Leone on the west coast of Africa, White Man's Grave. But we never went at the quayside, out in the harbour. Right? So we sailed from there now, after about a day, I think, taking on supplies and water and what have you. We sailed from there to Cape Town. Now in Cape Town, there again, we didn't go into the quayside. I suppose it wouldn't be allowed in case anybody went aboard. And Table Mountain, we learned all about it in school, but there it is facing you. It's like a big mountain with a straight across. Well, I think the swell of the water is a bit dodgy there, so he moves off to Simonstown, which is about 25 miles away. Now, when we arrive at Simonstown, which is a big naval base, they decide to let us off for a day ashore. Well, there were so many troops aboard, and the only shuttle service they had to take us to the quayside was launches, motor launches, see? So all right, we arrive now, we goes ashore, and it cost us then 1 and 3 return to go to Cape Town. Excellent. So we was a big gang of Welsh fellas. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you, we was all Welsh and Devonshire. That formed the draft. It was called RMDLA. That formed our draft, you see.
What is RMDLA?
I don't know. I don't know. That was our draft, and that comprised of Welsh boys from all over Wales and also Devonshire. See, that formed the draft. Now then, do you mind if I go back now to tell you what the type of billets we had in Luton?
Yes.
It was underneath a church and was camp beds. In the particular church that we were, there were 2 squads, number 4 and number 5. Well, I was in number 5. So, of course, we're on all heavy training. The gas went through the gas chamber, rifle drill, machine gun drill, all the arms drill, physical fitness, well, everything that's needed in the army, you know, that's to perfection, like, see. Anyway, when we arrive now at Simonstown, 1 of 3 return, and we goes now to Cape Town, because 1 of 3 return. So there's a big gang of us now in the street in Cape Town, and we see 2 girls now going to a dance somewhere. Now, you know, now this is new to us now, because we've hardly been out of the town, sort of thing, you know. So you've always got that little one, you know, in a group of fellas, a little nosy one, a little Welsh fella, ginger hair, see, I forget, Emblin something it was. So he runs on to these 2 girls and he says, "Where's the dance?" "Come on," she said, "it's for you boys, it is," she said. They treated us excellent, mine. At the Nugget Boot Polish Factory, and they organised a dance or a get together for us, see. So we goes now, and we have. And I remember one, the particular dance that's caught me was Hands, Knees and Bumps of Daisy, you know the one, see.
Yes.
So it come now to come back, see. And when we gets to the station now, well, there's a terrible shamozzle on the station. One Welsh soldier runs up to me and he said, "We're too late, the train have gone." Oh, I said to myself, "Oh God," I said, "never." So this girl now, what accompanied us, you know, she said, "Don't worry, you can come back with me." Oh, I said, "No, good, you know, this is, you're going to the army, it's all you're concerned about now is the army, see, no fetching any problems." So anyway, we get to the station, the train was there. Well, everybody's fighting and whistles blowing, oh God. Anyway, we get back to the Queen Mary now, and we set sail now. Now, our next port of call now is Trincomalee in Ceylon. Now then, we arrives there in the harbour as usual. So, you know, this is all new to us. We disembarking off the Queen Mary onto a boat called the Egra. Now, she was an all-Indian crew. Now, we know what the Indians are with their religion. They carry their own sheep or cattle, whatever the case may be, and they kill it themselves. See? Well, we got 2 kit bags, our rifle, and we're going down the gangway of the Queen Mary and up the gangway of the boat called the Egra. And there was about 3,000 of us on that, and we was packed jammed like sardines. Hammocks in the ceiling, people sleeping on the tables, people sleeping on the floor. The toilet facilities there was nil, actually. It just a plank, actually. Cockroaches, oh. Well, the food was absolutely disgraceful. We volunteered to send our own cooks now to cook the food, they wouldn't allow it. And the boat, seasick, my God, you'd never believe it. She was really bad. Anyway, when we set sail now, we goes up on deck and we looks across and we sees now the remainder of the convoy. Oh, it's colossal. And all packed jammed with stuff, you know, going out the Middle East. Oh, by the way, the Queen Mary shot off to Singapore with RAF personnel. See? That's where she was going. And anyway, goes back to the Egra now, and
is it spelled A-G-R-A?
E-G-R-A. That's right. And, well, now, going through the Indian Ocean, and we looks across. Now, we've only got one armed merchantman with us. Now then we go through the Indian Ocean, we've seen the flying fish, we goes across the equator, we sees the flying fish, sharks and what have you. Now then we're going up now, we passes all where the trouble is now in the Gulf, because we're going up through the Red Sea now. We was 3 weeks on the Egra, we're going up through the Red Sea, and it was so warm there that it was standing in a pair of shorts and the water was teeming off you. Like if you just come out of a shower, see? Well, we get into Port Suez now. This time we goes into the port. Port Suez. That lies the Indian end of the Suez Canal. Not the Mediterranean end. The Indian Ocean end, see? Now then, at the quayside was the Egyptian train, which we thought were armoured cars, because no windows. The typical, we thought they were armoured cars anyway. Well, we goes now to a camp called Abbasiyah, right? Now then, we have a meal, of course, which is natural. Then we goes to a campsite now, under canvas we are. Now then, I broke my dentures before we arrived in South Africa. Right?
Yes.
Now then, although they had the dentist aboard the Queen Mary, they didn't have the material to make any repairs. So, of course, now when I arrived at Abbasiyah, they cannot send you up the Western Desert without any teeth, because all you would be living on was bully beef and biscuits. So I had to remain behind now and went to a camp called Helmia, which is a base camp where they had the dental facilities, you see. With the result, I lost all my friends. Now, from there, I goes to an holding battalion, which comprised of a lot of dyads, such as the pre-war soldiers, with the tattoos on their chests and what have you. Now, they had been out here a few years. Of course, I'm still lily white, aren't I? Just come out, see? Well, now, I guess posted to a company called 5 Company RESE 7th Armour Division.
5 Company what?
RASC, 7th Armour Division. Now then, I'm in amongst now all these regular soldiers type of people, see? Them that was in the army pre-war and all this and that, you see? Well, my job was driving a water vehicle, a water tank. Now, we're up in the Western Desert, not mine. Now then, the vehicles up there now are dispersed 200, 250 yards apart. My job now was to get water, either from the inflated bags on the desert, or to certain water points which were available. but not such a thing as a tap. You see?
Yes.
Now then, there, that was continually attacked. Our first incident of any trouble was three Italian planes come over, miles up in the air, could hardly see them, pale blue sky, and they were white. And our job was to replenish by putting our vehicle back to the back of the other vehicle, and it would offload your cargo then onto them, you see. And then they would take it up, what they would call B echelon, they would take it up to the front line, see. Well, now, my job, as I say now, was to deliver water, which was rationed. Say, a couple pint traps, and at one particular time, I had to replenish the 4th Australian Division, a certain sections of them, you see. And before I could do that, I had to take an officer with me, because you know what they are, they might have wanted to tick the lot, see. That's how important water was. The 100% important of being out there is the water. Well, the first campaign started December the 9th, 1940.
By the way, those Italian planes, did they hit anything?
Yes, they caught three vehicles, yes. Yes. They caught three vehicles.
Was there any anti-aircraft against them?
No, nothing. Nothing at all. In our unit, our company, I think the four RASC companies that comprised the service and for the 7th Armoured Div was number 5, 550, 58 and 65. That's the four RASC companies. And the types of vehicles we had at that particular time was Bedford 3-tonners, Ford, Canadian Ford, Chevrolets, but as time went on, he went on to the big vehicles, and the 10-tonners, the Max and the White Sea. Anyway, the first campaign started December the 9th, 1940. And the first place to fall was Sidibarani. Now, I was in a party of six that was detailed to bring back the captured vehicles. So, don't forget this, mine. I've got the proof, mine. When you go out there and you go to the hospital, and if you're getting posted back to your unit, there is no roads like to say, is Oxford Street there and is Piccadilly Circus there. They give you a little bit of paper, which I got in there, and it says, finding your own way back, mine, proceed for 30 1/7 miles in that direction, and then when you come to a certain track, you get instructions to take another route. You see, that's the way and you had to cadge your lifts. You had to, you know, bum your lifts to there. Because, I mean, it wasn't one the case, oh, we send a car for you. It wasn't on. We had nothing, see? And everything, if a vehicle broke down, broke down to the extent that it couldn't be mended there and then, you would take part of that, the workshop group would take part of that to repair other vehicles, see. Anyway, Sidibarani fell, then Bardia, then Tobruk. Now we are moving up now, and the way we move up is arrowhead formation. Now we are working now south, well inland, away from the coast. See, you couldn't have your convoy like on the continent where they had convoys on the roads, one behind the other. Now, that wasn't allowed out there. You couldn't, because it was too easy a target for the planes. They'd come down and they got the lot of you, weren't they? So what, we used to travel that way.
An arrowhead.
ROTC, and I mean there were times there when you couldn't see the lorry on the extreme there. You couldn't see the extreme right over there. It was too far. I mean, you were 500 vehicles. See, so it's a tremendous amount of ground you're taking up. See. Well, we goes right up now. There was Derna, then the next place, and we goes up to Sidi Barani, Benghazi.
Were you seeing Italian prisoners?
Yes, we at one time there were so many Italian prisoners. They were in a compound on the desert, and we had the Indian division now was guarding them. You see, they had a machine gun on each side. They were like that, like a square, and on each side they had a machine gun. The Indian division. See, well now we get to Sidi Barani, and we coming back now for a refit. We coming back to base. Now we coming all the way back because our vehicles now, the pounding they've taken on the desert, you see. And don't forget this, mind. When you're talking about looking after a vehicle, you have to look after a vehicle. Don't want a case, oh, well, that's gone. The matter is broken. That wasn't on. And even your superstructure, nor the canvas, that didn't have to be flapping or nothing, you see. So anyway,
you were just about to tell me about the Italian prisoners.
Yes, well, they were there. Well, I mean, see, they were only too happy to be captured. Understand me now? So, when we comes back to camp now, we come back to Mina camp, near the pyramids. Well, we're on, it's in the case now, and the rest, you're on detail down there, you see. I was an escort for taking these prisoners of war, right? That were at the base for inoculations for them to be coming home to Britain. Understand me now? They were only too happy. They're out of the war. Now with us, we knows we still got another 4 or 5 years of war to fight. Well, we down now running on details, and we get new lorries. We got to do the camouflaging ourselves. The nets, what the thread, these tapes, brown and green tapes through the nets to camouflage your vehicles. And now after about 3 months perhaps, we going back up the desert. We used to call it the blue, actually, up the blue. We goes back up now. Now, we goes up now and we're progressing now, carrying on with the war. And by the way, we are living on bully and biscuits. Spoonful of bacon here and there, spoonful of tomatoes. But the porridge we were having was burgoo. What called burgoo? It's biscuits put to soak overnight. And that's the sort of porridge you was having. And
could your teeth cope with it?
Oh, yes, yes. That's what I say. You had to be up there. If you had no teeth, well, it would just starve to death because you couldn't eat. The biscuits was as hard as iron, see? Anyway, we goes back up the desert and progressing with the war now. And when it comes to washing your Dixie or washing your clothes, you was using petrol. To clean your Dixies, you was there might be an half a Dixie of water. Well, just imagine a load of men shoving their Dixies in that to clean them.